When Mallory O'Mara first watched The Creature from the Black Lagoon, it kindled an obsession. That obsession spiraled into an insatiable curiosity and an intense emotional investment when she discovered that a woman named Millicent Patrick had been the mastermind behind the character in The Creature from the Black Lagoon. Except that Millicent had been erased from history when a jealous male co-worker took credit for her work. Nobody knew where Millicent went or what happened to her until now. A filmmaker living and working in Hollywood and host of the popular Reading Glasses podcast, Mallory O'Mara, now excavates a past buried by misogyny as it taps into the zeitgeist in The Lady from the Black Lagoon, Hollywood Monsters, and the Lost Legacy of Millicent Patrick. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Mallory O'Mara to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Joe, thanks for having me.
A great pleasure to have you on the program. This book is very fun and is just captivating to read. What brought you, or I guess what tapped you on the shoulder and introduced you to this person that is fascinating in and of herself, Millicent Patrick?
So when I was a teenager, I was going through all the classic Universal monster movies and giving myself sort of a education on monsters, and I got to Creature from the Black Lagoon, which is the last one. Creature is the last monster in that pantheon, and I did what all nerds do and went online afterwards and had to look up all kinds of trivia and behind-the-scenes facts and stuff, and I saw a photo of a woman working on the creature suit, and it was the very, very first time that I had ever seen a woman working on a monster movie, and underneath the photo is the caption, illustrator and designer Millicent Patrick. And it was like being struck by lightning, and it was the first time I could ever imagine myself in that world, and she became my hero.
So she became your hero, but you didn't, like most of us, didn't know a lot about her. So then you go on the quest.
Yes, she was just sort of this great mystery for decades and decades. People knew that she had designed the creature, but they didn't know where she came from, where she went afterwards. They didn't even know if she was still alive. And it wasn't until years later where I had gotten a tattoo of her, and I was having a conversation with somebody about it and explaining to them that no one knew what happened to Millicent Patrick. And they said, wow, you should write that book. That would make a great book. And I laughed and they said, no, you should write that book. And it was a why not me moment. And I thought, I want to know so much about her. Why can't I find out?
Creature from the Black Lagoon is what year?
1954.
So the idea of a woman creating that, and especially that time, is fascinating.
Oh, yeah, she was the first woman to design monsters. She was the first woman to work in a monster shop. And because no one really knew what happened to her, you know, no one followed in her steps for many years.
So how did she get the gig?
So Millicent Patrick was also a background actress, and she was working on the Universal lot. And one of her favorite things to do while she was in the downtime between scenes on set is sketch portraits of her co-stars. And so she had all these great portraits, and while she was in the makeup chair, she showed them to a man named Bud Westmore, who was the head of the makeup department. And he was so impressed with her talent that he decided to hire her for what we would now call a concept artist.
Now, a concept artist comes up with the concept, right? The idea, and then it is fleshed out by somebody else.
Yes. So what she would do is she would both design monsters but also beauty makeup. So if someone, you know, they were developing a new movie, she would come up with ideas for how the makeups would look, the hair, facial hair, and monsters. And then someone else would either put the makeup on those faces or, in the case of a monster, sculpt it out, create it, make it into a mask or a sculpture.
So let's talk about a couple aspects of her career. First of all, she is trained. Her training is impeccable. She is trained at a very prestigious art institute. Her original career goal was what?
Well, she started as an animator. She wanted to work in animation and illustration. She went to the Chouinard Institute, which was a female-run art college in Southern California, and she got hired by Disney himself.
Gets hired by Walt Disney to be in the animation studio. What films does she work on?
So she worked on Fantasia, she worked on Dumbo, she worked on The Reluctant Dragon, and The Reluctant Dragon was actually, it's a mix of animation and live action, and she was in the movie herself as a background actress, and that's what got her started into acting.
Was it a desire to act that had her leave animation?
Unfortunately, no. She actually suffered from migraines. So working in animation with the light boxes and having to concentrate on these tiny drawings really was, wreaking havoc on her physically. So she decided to leave Disney after a couple of years.
And again, the only woman on the Disney team animating, right, in the beginning.
She was one of the first female animators. There was a couple other female animators, one named Retta Scott, but there was only – she started in the ink and paint department, which was full of women, and that was the women who inked and painted the animators' drawings onto animation cells. But she was so talented that she got bumped up to color animating with a couple other women, but there were only a handful of them back then.
So then she goes into acting, and how does that work out?
You know, I love Millicent Patrick. I'm very biased about her, as you can probably tell, but she wasn't that great of an actress, unfortunately. So she never really progressed beyond background roles.
And that was not fulfilling for her.
Oh, she actually loved being an actress, and she considered herself an actress until, much later in life. And I think that she went through something that I think a lot of actors go through is, she never got her big break, and she
Right.
was a little bit frustrated about that.
So, and then you start going for other jobs, and this is how she winds up at Universal?
Yes. Well, she was on the lot as working in a background role, waiting in the makeup chair, but she still wanted to be a visual artist. Nothing ever killed her artistic spirit. She loved illustrating. She loved drawing. And then she crossed paths with Bud Westmore.
Okay. So tell us about Bud Westmore and why he is so integral into the story.
So what's interesting about Bud Westmore is that he caused the rise of the greatest part of her career, but he also caused her downfall. So Bud Westmore was part of the Westmore makeup dynasty. This was a period of time where, there were five Westmore brothers, and there was a chunk of time where each one of them headed up the makeup department at a major studio, Paramount, Warner Brothers. So they were very influential. And Bud ran the makeup shop at Universal Studios, and he was he took over from Jack Pierce, who was the famous makeup designer who created the Boris Karloff Frankenstein head and the Wolfman. But Bud wasn't as great with the monster makeup. He was more of a beauty guy, so he really needed Millicent Patrick's talent to create these monsters.
So in the creation of the monsters, this became something that she greatly enjoyed as well. What do you believe her gift was that made her so good at what she did?
I really, really think that it was her skill that she learned in animation. And Millicent Patrick had this ability to convey a lot of emotion and a lot of movement in just a few lines. So that's sort of the genius of the creature design, is that he looks almost human. You really empathize with him, because with this one design, it almost looks like a makeup instead of a rubber mask.
Yeah. So in the design, and this movie comes out, and it is received how?
Very well.
Yeah.
It was so well that they sent her on a press tour to promote it, which really ended up being the downfall of her career.
Okay. So what happens on the press tour?
So Universal Studios, right before the movie comes out, they decide, we have this very beautiful, captivating woman who designed the creature. Why don't we send her out around the country to promote it? It'll be the beauty who created the beast. But Bud Westmore was not having that. He was very, very jealous of her. He didn't want other people to know that he didn't design the creature. So he said, no, we need to rebrand the tour. She went from the beauty who designed the beast, the beauty who created the beast, to the beauty who lives with the beast.
Mm.
So they made her into a more of a maternal role. She went from being his creator to being his sort of like weird roommate caretaker. So, and she still agreed to that, and she goes on the tour, and before she goes on the tour, he makes her promise that she won't tell anybody that she designed it. She has to give all credit to him.
Okay.
And she still agrees, and while she was on the tour, saying that Bud Westmore designed this, he still got so jealous of all the attention she was getting, and he fired her, and when she came back, she didn't have a job.
no longer a job at Universal Studios. And was she able, I mean, we think of this in logical terms now where you think, well, okay, but you hire somebody, you hire an agent to go out and say, look, she was the woman behind this Creature from the Black Lagoon. Don't you want to hire her other film studio?
Well, you have to remember that this was also a time where most of the other studios were, makeup departments were run by Bud Westmore's brothers.
Oh, that old story. Right. So
yeah.
So she is pretty much blacklisted across the board.
Yes. And as far as for many decades, that's all we knew of what happened to her.
And what were you able to find out after she gets fired?
Well, I will leave that for readers of the book. It is a big plot point to what happened to her. But I was very, very lucky enough to, I spent, you know, almost 3 years of research into this, and I found everything. I did find her family, which really broke the case open for me, and I had to kind of become a private investigator and find everything that happened to her life. But I did. I found almost everything.
Does she have a fulfilling life in the end?
Yes. Absolutely. Nothing could kill her artistic spirit. She was so proud of the things that she did. And Millicent Patrick was a woman you couldn't keep down.
We left out another part of this story, which is she's on the periphery of William Randolph Hearst. Tell us her relationship to that story.
So Millicent Patrick's father was a man named Camille Rossi, and he worked as the superintendent of construction at Hearst Castle in Southern California for 10 years. So that's where Millicent Patrick grew up, was on that estate. And that was the summer home of William Randolph Hearst, who, you know, listeners will know if they've ever seen a little movie called Citizen Kane. And he was really America's first media mogul. And his estate, it's like being in Wonderland. It's the most decadent, opulent, huge estate you could imagine. And that's where her childhood stomping grounds.
One of the things that is fascinating when you think about her legacy is, and you make this point, when the film Shape of Water comes out, the director says, tips his hat, really, to Millicent Patrick for creating a character that he could look to in his film Shape of Water.
Oh, yes. Shape of Water absolutely would not exist without Millicent Patrick.
What is it about? What are the connections, do you believe?
So I believe that the Creature became such an iconic figure and Guillermo del Toro fell in love with him so much because of that empathetic design. He has so much humanity in him that you feel for him. And at the end of Creature from the Black Lagoon, you want him to win. You want him to end up with the girl. And that's how Guillermo del Toro felt. And so he created Shape of Water as his reimagining of that, of a situation where the creature does get the girl and the creature is the hero.
In your unearthing of a lot of this information, were there people who I assume, like you, were very happy to get the story out?
Oh, absolutely. There are so many female filmmakers and horror fans and artists that have had a similar experience that when they found out about Millicent Patrick, they felt like they belonged in whatever artistic world they were in, and she was a hero to them. So getting to read her story and see it brought to the world is so, so gratifying for so many of us.
And what a tattoo you have. This is what year did you get the tattoo of Millicent?
I got the tattoo in fall of 2015.
Yeah. And that became, as you're working on the book.
No, that's what actually kicked it off.
Yeah.
It was that conversation about the tattoo. So I, you know, if you ever want to write a book about someone, get a tattoo. It's a great way to start.
Well, so when you're walking in and talking to people about it, do you just point to your arm and say, hey, look, this is who I'm writing about?
Oh, yeah. It's very convenient.
And educational. Absolutely.
Yes.
The name of the book is The Lady from the Black Lagoon, Hollywood Monsters and the Lost Legacy of Millicent Patrick. The book is published by Hanover Square Press. Mallory, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. Again, Mallory O'Meara is the author of The Lady from the Black Lagoon, Hollywood Monsters and the Lost Legacy of Millicent Patrick. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.